problem. Thank you. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't found it necessary to take a drink, nor have I had a drink, since January 25th, 1981. And I'm grateful for that, and I'm grateful and privileged to be here to talk to y'all. And it's always good for me to be at an AA group, an AA meeting, and it's always a privilege when somebody asks you to share a little bit about what's going on in your life and what's happening. And I'm going to try to be as honest as an alcoholic can be, at least as this could probably be the worst meeting I'll ever do in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's going to be the best one I could do tonight. And that's all you have to do, just try to carry the message. You don't even have to carry it. You're not even in charge of carrying it. It's just trying to carry it, and that's what I'm going to try to do tonight. And I want to congratulate all the celebrants, birthday people, and I also appreciate, you know, I get here a little bit early sometime, and I have a lot of people, old friends and new friends, and people come up to me and express really nice thoughts and sentiments about the meeting and the step series, how it's helping them, and I always appreciate that. It sort of like encourages me, you know, because I never know what I'm talking about, and I'm sure that's going to harden you guys. I have no clue as to what's going on. I can't wait to hear what I have to say. You know? We're on step 7 tonight, one of my favorite steps, 6 and 7, they call them old-timer steps, and you know, 7 is about humility. I was going to do my world-famous talk on humility, but I never do it with a group this small, you know, and that's a joke. I don't know, you know, that's an interesting thing. When you're an alcoholic, and I am an alcoholic, I'm a chronic alcoholic, an alcoholic talking about humility, I don't know anything about humility. I don't have a clue, I'm clueless when it comes to humility. Can you imagine that, an alcoholic talking about humility? You know, I'll tell you what I know about. I know about arrogance. I got a PhD in arrogance. I got a PhD in know-it-allism, and you don't know who the fuck you're talking to, and who the hell you think you are, you know, I'll show you, you know. Can't do that to me, you know. I got a PhD in self-pity, and I can certainly talk a little bit about humiliation. I'll tell you about that. But humility, I'm not really that good at that humility thing. I don't know. What do? You wake up in the morning and, I think I'll be humble today. You know, I just be humble today. I don't know. I don't do that stuff. I don't do humble that well. You know, it's an elusive deal. So I'm just going to talk about some stuff, and maybe somehow, some way, somehow the Holy Spirit will have humility, somehow bounce out of something, or somebody will hear something, I don't know. I'm going to read a couple of things from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and from the 12 and 12, so which is really pure AA. That's, you know, really, what I want to be is I want to be consistent with this book, not with the wisdom of the rooms. I mean, I love the wonderful fellowship of Well People's Anonymous here, and you have thousands and thousands of sick and suffering. And, you know, what does it say in the foreword? It says, and what people don't realize is alcoholics are very sick people. Just get 300 of them in a room, you know, and listen to what they say, you know, and just follow what they say to do. And in a strange sense, it sort of works, you know. It sort of works, although I have a sneaky suspicion that the greatest fellowship in the world, that even the fellowship in this room, which is great and there's a lot of love here, even the fellowship of this room would blow up and not work if it wasn't for the fact that this crap has been put in writing. If it wasn't for the fact that we had this book. You know, I've heard a lot of really great things in Alcoholics Anonymous. Things, you know, I mean, that people say, that you hear in the fellowship, and the fellowship is wonderful. And I've heard a lot of things that sort of have saved my life. But yeah, there's some crazy stuff too. There's a whole lot of stuff going on, and so that's why, you know, if I was going to say anything to anybody here regarding this deal, I would say know the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, know the 12 and 12, read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, read the stuff that was written 75, 80 years ago. You know, you guys have played telephone. You know thank you. You know that what's that game, telephone, where? Yeah, or whatever they call it, where, you know, you have a line of people and somebody, you know, on this side of the line whispers a word into the other person's ear, and then it goes on and on and on to like the 10th person, and the word maybe is penguin and it comes out elephant over here, you know, and that, you know, think about this thing. This thing has been passed along First of all, Alcoholics Anonymous and this fellowship and the program started way before 1935. Even Bill Wilson says he didn't discover this thing. It was built upon principles that came out of the Bible. I mean, if you read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, you know those guys who wrote Rarely Have We Seen a Person Fail, who thoroughly followed our path in 1939? Well, their path was not reading the Big Book. You know, the Big Book was written in 1939. This thing started in 1935. And they say the books that they found absolutely essential was Sermon on the Mount, which is in the book of Matthew, the book of James, we're almost called the James Club, and 1 Corinthians 13. And so they built this thing upon principles that have been going around for thousands and thousands of years. Dr. Jung even talks about it. I'm going to read something out of the book as far as some of those principles and some of the things. I mean, people have been getting sober and have had changed lives for thousands of years. This thing has been going on, you know, and I just pray this thing happens to you. I really appreciate it. I think there was a young lady named Sherry. Was it Sherry? Who's the gal you just came up and got a 2-year medallion, was it?
Cheryl.
What's your name?
Cheryl.
Right. I'm going to talk about what you were talking about. That's what this is going to be about. It's going to be about, I don't know whether you, I loved what she had to say. You know, she actually did it. She should be doing this step. Guess what? She doesn't even know it, but she's doing this step. You know, didn't she say she tried to do it a whole bunch of different ways? She was trying to figure out how to do this thing. She was trying to do it her way, but she got pounded, right? We're going to talk about the pounding. I'm excited for you guys. You know why? I've been through it. I probably got a little more to go, no question about it. But you're about to go through it. The AA car wash. Yeah, you come in dirty. It's true. You come in dirty, you go through that car wash, we'll call it, oh hell, life, okay? Let's just call it life. It's a humbling experience. We'll call it life. You just sort of go through that car wash, you know. You think alcohol was the problem. Alcohol, listen, let me explain this to you. Alcohol was the solution to the problem. You drank alcohol because you couldn't stand life sober. Because life is tough, it's scary, it's crappy, it's shitty, you know what I mean? I know every once in a while you get laid and you think it's a good thing, or you get a car, you know, you get a new blouse or something, you think it's great. But the bottom line is that it really ain't enough for you, is it? You got to drink the alcohol, because the bottom line is deep down inside you feel like a piece of shit. That's what the whole thing is about. You know, you're basically a nothing. You're always going to be a nothing. You always feel less than everybody else. You're never going to be something. You're always going to be a nothing. You put something in your body, you feel like an almost. When you're a nothing, almost is top of the world. And so, I mean, that's why people drink, right? You drink because, it says men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They're restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. This isn't something I made up. This is something I knew before I came in here. This is something I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. This is right out of the book. I drank because I suffered from alcoholism. Alcohol, you know, the disease is named after the drug that we find is best able to cure the disease. I mean, listen, I got nothing against alcohol. If it wasn't for alcohol, I probably would have blown my brains out. I certainly would have never had sex. I never would have been able to dance with a girl. I never would have been able to do a million things without alcohol. I defy anybody to drink alcohol and have it do for them what it did for me and stop. You just ain't going to do it. No woman, no car, no amount of money, no job, no nothing, no trip, no vacation ever worked quite as well as just a few drinks. And so I drank it. And of course, the unfortunate part of my life is that alcohol doesn't work, or the fortunate part is alcohol doesn't work for me anymore. But the real sad thing about my life is alcohol stopped working for me about 10 years before I realized it stopped working for me, and I hurt a lot of people, and I hurt myself. And so what you realize, what you ultimately realize after you come in here, after you've been in here for a little while, you know, when you first come in here, you know, how many people came in here because they wanted to stop drinking? Three? How many people came in here because they wanted to stop drinking? Me too. I looked the guy in the eye, and I said, I need help, I can't stop drinking. That's what happened. One day I looked a man in the eye and I said, I need help. You know, prior to that time, a week prior to that time, a month prior to that time, I probably said, I need a girlfriend. I need my girlfriend back. I need money. I need a car. I need a job. I need a new boss. I need to lose 50 pounds. All the vanity shit. You know what I mean? I probably would have said a million things. But all I know is one day I looked a man in the eye and my life was unmanageable. You know, I was overwhelmed. And somehow, some way, in my worst state, I connected the fact that my life was unmanageable and that I was overwhelmed with the fact that I couldn't stop drinking because I was drinking against my will. You know what it means to drink against your will? I mean, if you're an alcoholic, you should know about that. You wake up in the morning and say, I'm not going to drink today. You say, I'm definitely not going to drink today. You say it with feeling, with emotion. You're sincere. I ain't going to drink today. And by 5 o'clock, you're drunk. Then you wake up the next morning and say, I'm not going to buy booze today. And by 5 o'clock, you're searching for dimes, nickels, and quarters to buy a quart bottle of Carlos Rossi Chianti. sit by a radio. I used to sit by the phonograph and listen to the same record over and over again. One of these Alky songs, you know, like A Pirate Looks at 40, or Running on Empty, or I'm Mr. Blue, or Only the Lonely, or all that, you know, anything by Karen Carpenter, you know, Rainy Days and Mondays. You know, and just drink yourself silly. And you get to the point where you can't stop drinking. You're drinking against your will. You can't envision life. Yeah, I was 31 years old. I thought my life was over. I thought my life turned into a bottle. I used to be a bar drinker. I used to drink with people. My life turned into a bar. I used to go home and I'd sit there and I'd drink alone by myself with my imaginary friends, you know, thinking about my funeral. All those good-looking gals at my funeral, feeling sorry for the way they treated me, you know. Sure, you're laughing, you don't know what it's like, but so, you know, that's why I came in here. I came in here because I couldn't stop drinking, you know. So, and now I'm hanging around, I've gone to thousands of meetings, and I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, and nobody's drinking. Nobody even has a drinking problem. What the hell's that all about? I've recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body. I had a hopeless state of mind and body. Yeah, I'll tell you what a hopeless state of mind and body is. It's not, you know, my boyfriend left me. It's not that, what am I going to do for friends? It's not that I don't have money. You know, that's not a hopeless state of mind and body. There's hope there. A hopeless state of mind and body is when you can't stop drinking. I couldn't stop drinking. I recovered from that hopeless state of mind and body. So what the hell am I doing here? I'm doing here because you know why I'm here? I'm going to tell you why I'm here. You've probably figured this out. If you haven't figured this out by now, I don't want this to be a shock to you. I'm here because drinking alcohol has very little to do with alcoholism. Now, I know that sounds a little weird, and I'm not looking to start a fight, and you don't have to believe me, but if drinking alcohol has to do with alcoholism, then you're going to have to explain to me why in thousands of meetings with all sorts of people, and ranging in all sorts of ages, sober for 1 year, 2 years, up to 45 years, why they're still going to meetings. Why they're still going to meetings. Drinking alcohol is a symptom of the disease. It's a symptom of the disease. It's not the disease. The disease centers in our mind, not our bodies. It has something to do with your brain. And I'm checking you guys out, and you don't have any extra brains around here. So you may get rid of the drinking, but what are you going to do about the thinking? Especially when you're comfortable with your thinking. When you're comfortable with your brain. My sponsor once said to me, he says, you know, your problem, Russ, is your personality. I said, I love my personality. I love my personality. He says, well, it's killing you. Dr. Carl Jung wrote a book, Manninger, in the 1930s, called Man Against Himself. He did a chapter on alcoholism. He said, alcoholics are men and women who are out to destroy themselves. Just watch TV. Just read the papers. You know, you think your problem is no money? You know, I mean, you got movie stars with all sorts of money and they're killing themselves with needles in their arm and all sorts of stuff. You think your problem is no sex? You got people having sex all over the place in Hollywood and all over the place. And you think it's lack of fame? They got all that. They're still killing themselves. You know, I mean, let me tell you something. This disease has nothing to do. There's nothing you can buy. There's no person you can know. There's no relationship you can put in your life that's physical. There's nothing you can do, absolutely nothing you can do to save yourself from this disease. You can never save yourself from this disease except through a spiritual remedy. You know, you can't buy something to save from, you know, you can forestall this disease. You can hang around even AA for a while, for 2, 3, 4 years, maybe 10 years. And you'll still get to be 14 years sober and be hanging in there, you know, live a life of quiet desperation, still be miserable, still be worried about money, still be worried about all sorts of stuff, live a life of anxiety, of quiet desperation, of be a thumb sucking crybaby, just live off of discussion meetings where you can come here and dump your shit every hour, every day, or something like that, and try to make yourself feel better just so you can hang in there and not drink. And it's cool not to drink. I'm not putting down the not drinking thing. But I'm in a fellowship where it talks about we've experienced much of heaven, we've been rocking in the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. I'm in a fellowship where it says, see to it your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. I'm in a fellowship where it says if you sincerely take this position, the position of trust in God, all sorts of remarkable things happen. Being all powerful will give you everything you need if you stay close to him and perform his works well. He says, when this happens, we lose all concerns about our little plans and designs. And believe me, the only thing I ever thought about was my little plans and designs. we start thinking about how we can help others. No matter how far down we go, we have a new freedom, we have a new happiness. We lose fear today, tomorrow, the hereafter, we're reborn. How do I get a hold of that stuff? How do I get some of that stuff? I mean, A-meetings are great. A-meetings are great. They're wonderful. You come here, I used to come here because I needed a meeting. I need a meeting, you know? I need a meeting. Like, you know, anybody ever said I need a drink? You ever do that thing? I need a drink? I need a drink. Pull the fucking car over. I need a drink. Let's get a drink. When I said I needed a drink, I wasn't fooling around. I needed a drink. You know what I mean? You know why I need a drink? Because of them. You know who they are. They're the reasons we're in here. You know, I needed a drink. Well, you know something? I don't need a drink. You know what I need? I need a meeting. You know, I don't go to bars anymore. I go to AA and drink coffee. I need. I go to a meeting. After 15 minutes, I stop thinking about myself for a nanosecond. Maybe I wake up and I look at the dancing monkey who's talking about I'm the dancing monkey tonight. Maybe it makes me forget my bullshit for about a half an hour. I feel a little bit better. The thing sort of works. This A thing is great. And they get in my car and I drive home. I'm alone by myself in my mind. And then all of a sudden the thoughts start coming again. What am I going to do about the money? What am I going to do about the relationship? What am I going to do about this? And they start crowding in. I start feeling shitty again. Over and over and over and over and over and over again. So what am I going to do about that stuff? Is there any relief possible? I mean, the not drinking is great. Don't get me wrong. The not drinking is great. But when do I get that rocket ship in the fourth dimension of existence? When do I experience much of heaven? How do you do that when you're broke? How do you do that when you don't have a relationship with you? How do you do that when you need stuff and you don't have stuff? And you got to have stuff. How do you do that when that deal's going on? So you get to go and they say unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious, which isn't a good thing, by the way. And if true happiness, he'll find none at all. Precarious sobriety. Unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious. What are the consequences of being an alcoholic? Are the only consequences of being an alcoholic that you have a drinking problem or you want to drink? What about those people that don't drink anymore and don't even want to drink? They're just crazy, like me, like you. Let me read a couple of things out of the big book of alcoholics. So you go into that alcoholic, you go into that car wash. We'll talk about the car wash in a second. Let me read you a couple of things out of the book. They may throw some light on it. This is on different parts of the book, because the book is consistent. Page 26. This was Roland Hazard. He was a certain American businessman. This is before AA started. This is before they had the big book. This is before AA started. This is Roland Stack. He was like pre-AA. And his story is in here because this story is about a man who recovered before Alcoholics Anonymous came into existence. Did you know there were people recovering from alcoholism before Alcoholics Anonymous came into existence? Before the big book? Before the fellowship? There were people recovering. You need to find out what they were doing. You see, the people who wrote this thing between 1935 and 1939, they found out what they were doing. And they did it. And that's why they had that rocket ship in the fourth dimension of existence, which he had not even dreamed. You want to get in touch with those people. They were close to the action. You want to get close to the source. You don't want to be the telephone 75 or 80 years down the road with the input of millions and billions of alcoholics that come day that change things because they take what they like and they leave the rest. You ever hear that, take what you like and leave the rest? See, here's the thing. There's certain things we say in Alcoholics Anonymous that the fellowship says that are sort of buffers against the truth. I'm a lawyer. I have a sign in my office. Because, a guy comes to my office, they all have the same story. They come to my office, they don't want to be there because it costs them money and they don't want to talk to me, they're like you guys. I don't want to go there. What does this guy have to say? I know everything. I should be up there talking and all that sort of shit. So the bottom line is they don't want to come to my office, but something's happened in their lives. The wife served them with papers. The husband served them with papers. They closed down the credit cards. Maybe they've been indicted or something like that. So they're like forced to come to me and pay me money. So they don't want to be there. So they walk into my office and they tell me a story. The story is always the same. It sounds like this. It's not my fault. I'm not to blame. I didn't do it. If I did do it, I wouldn't have done it except for this, for what they did to me. They just tell me this story, and it's all about how life is unfair, if you try to challenge them on anything, they say, you don't understand. As a matter of fact, you start thinking you're at an A meeting talking to your sponsee, And they tell me this story, and I realize that I don't care what they're sober, and they're telling me this story. They're sober, and they're telling me the story of the reality of their life, And let me tell you something. Most people who get arrested, who go through divorces, or whatever that is, who has these kind of problems in their lives, they're usually coming to me because there's a consequence in their life that has made their life unmanageable, much the same way as we come in. You understand what I'm saying? But what happened is usually the consequence, whether it's being charged with a crime or whether it's being going through a divorce after many years, usually the consequences did not all of a sudden happen out of nothing. They usually happen because these people that come into my office have been living an unhealthy, you know, Bill Wilson said that the next step in sobriety, the next frontier is emotional sobriety. And he says what we're really suffering from is unhealthy dependencies. Unhealthy dependencies. Now, the first dependency we suffer from, which is unhealthy, is probably something called booze. Well, it's probably not the first thing we suffer from. Booze is really something that cures what we really suffer from. You know what we, you know what you suffer from. That thing you're thinking about all the time. Sex, money, power, prestige, you know, you, me, what about me? What about me? What about me? What about me? Okay, enough about me. Let's talk about you. What do you think about me? You know? Applause, approval, love. You know, it's all about me. That's the disease. The disease, here's the problem. The disease is you. Is every thought you have is worshiping you, is dedicated to you, is thinking about you, is worried about you. Why do you worry all the time about yourself and everything in your life? Because that's all you do, worry about yourself and everything in your life. That's the disease. So why don't you just go home and try to get rid of that? I mean, you don't have the booze, you don't have the heroin, you don't have marijuana, you don't have any of that stuff anymore. You know, maybe you can sex it away. Maybe you can eat it away. You know, maybe you can blouse it away. Maybe you can, plastic surgery it away. You know, you might be able to, I don't know. You might be able to car it away or something like that. Maybe you can bank it away. Maybe you can get a job, maybe you can job it away. You know, maybe you figure out a way. You've all tried to do that stuff to get rid of it, right? Some of you were pretty successful, but it didn't work in the long run, right? It worked for a few minutes and then it was back to the same bullshit again, right? It's hard to get rid of stuff when you are the stuff, when you're the deal, right? And yet they talk about being rocking in the fourth dimension. It says a new freedom and new happiness. What is the new freedom and the new happiness? So, you know, that's really the problem here. So here's this guy, a certain American businessman. It's all about the surrender. We talked about it last week. It's all about surrendering and knowing the consequences of the disease and surrender. You know, somebody, I think it was Jerry, says, oh, I want to learn everything. I want to learn everything you know. I said, well, to learn everything I know, you're going to have to unlearn everything you know right now. You have to spend the next 20 years unlearning all the things that you think are true. Because the guy in my office is talking to me about the reality of his life, how he was arrested, you know, and I know, you know, as he's talking, I know he's crazy. I know he's seeing life askew. You know, the big book says we're selfish, we're self-centered. That's the nature of our disease. We're selfish, we're self-centered, and driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-delusion. That means you're deluded. That means that the thing that you think is absolutely true is false. But you've been getting away with thinking it's false for years. You think you're a good guy and you're an asshole. You think it's not your fault and it's all your fault. You think other people are blaming, you're the only one to blame. You know, you think the world is giving you a bad break and let me tell you, the world would do better without you. You're doing nothing to contribute to the world because you're selfish, you're self-centered, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. You step on the toes of others and they retaliate. See me without provocation, but you ultimately see that your decisions based upon self, by the way, that's out of the big book and it's talking about me and it's talking about you. Your decisions based upon self put you in a position to be hurt. I don't know why I never made decisions based upon self. I just made decisions on what I thought would be best for me. I don't remember ever making a decision that I didn't think would be the best thing for me. I never remember saying, now how can I fuck myself up? What's the best decision I can do to really screw myself? You know what I mean? To me, it was like, where can I get the money? Where can I get laid? Where can I do that? What's the best decision I can make to get as far as I want to get? Now, if all I did was use this incredibly brilliant brain, because we know I'm smart as shit, you know what I mean? If all I did was use this incredible brain to get ahead, how the hell did I wind up on my ass, on the balls of my ass, in Alcoholics Anonymous? You know? So an alcoholic apparently is something called self-will run riot, whatever that is. What is self-will run riot? Well, you see, here's a problem. The first step in getting out of jail is you got to know you're jail in the first place. The first step in realizing you're an alcoholic is you got to know you got a drinking problem. So if you don't know what self-will run riot looks like in your life, how do you expect to get away from it? How do you know that it's self-will when you're doing shit? You'll be doing shit self-will all over the place and not even know you're doing it because you're just doing what you think is right. But the problem is every time you do what you think is right, it's screwed up. So you got to sell yourself a sponsor. And he tells you you're an asshole and you're stupid and you're doing crazy things. And you say you don't understand. And you continue to do it for 2 years. And then one day you stand on a podium and you say, you know, I tried to do it my way. And they kept on telling me I got different sponsors and everything like that. And now I've learned my lesson. I didn't have a drink, but I can't take it anymore. You know, you go through that AA car wash. Where you walk in the car wash, and as you go through the car wash, you got guys in there with giant mouths, and they're beating the living shit out of you. Here comes bankruptcy. Here comes, you know, the poorhouse. Here comes stealing money from you. Here comes the bounce checks. Here comes the bad bosses. Here comes the bad breaks. They're just beating the crap out of you. And you're just trying like hell to stay on the conveyor belt. Just stay on the conveyor belt. Just keep on trusting on him and stay on the conveyor belt. Just don't fall off the conveyor belt. But after you get, as you're getting towards the end of that conveyor belt, all of a sudden, they're still beating you, but it's sort of feeling like, you know, a Swedish massage. By the time you get to the end, it's not that bad. You say, I think I'll try that sucker again, you know? It doesn't bother you so much. Life doesn't bother you. You know, that's the deal. So a certain American businessman had ability, good sense, and a high character. For years, he flunked. So the guy comes into my office. He's telling me this story. I'm listening to him. I know he's crazy. He doesn't know he's crazy. I know that the best thing I could do for this guy, as a matter of fact, I can't even represent him if he doesn't get off that story because it'll be like an embarrassment. It'll hurt him. It'll hurt me. You know what I mean? I know the best thing I could do for him is get him to, because his name is Arthur. He's on Planet Arthur. You know, on Planet Arthur, you don't really have to pay your bills. You can charge whatever you want. You spend money on things you don't need, you know, with money you don't have to impress people you don't like, and you never have to pay back the money. And Planet Arthur, you can do whatever the hell you want to do. And the only thing you tell you, because it's, you know, because you're special and you're different and the world owes you a living. There's all sorts of stuff that happens on Planet Arthur. I got to get him off Planet Arthur down to the planet Earth where me and the judge lives. See, that's where the judge lives, on planet Earth. I know if Arthur tells the judge his story, he's not going to jail, he's going under the jail. They're putting it the same, put him under the jail. So the best thing I can do to Arthur is somehow, in some way, in an hour consultation, get him back to planet Earth. So I have a sign in my office, you know, it says, it's from the movie A Few Good Men. It says, the truth, you can't handle the truth. You can't, we can't handle the truth. You know what we do with the truth? We say, go screw yourself. We say, I need another sponsor. I need somebody who likes me, my friend. I don't like this guy. He's an asshole, you know, and he's obnoxious. You know, you get somebody who tells us, take what you like and leave the rest. You know, the great thing about the fellowship is it is sort of like a buffer for the truth. Because we are, I used to tell my sponsor, I said, well, you know, I'm sensitive. He said, no, Russ, great artists are sensitive. You're just touchy. We're touchy. You know, you tell us the wrong thing the wrong way. I'm out of this frickin', I didn't come here for that bullshit. I'm out of here. You know what I mean? Like, where are you going? You know what I mean? You know. But that's the way we are. We're arrogant. We're self-will run riot, though we usually don't think so. Whatever the self-will run riot is, whatever that is, we got it and we don't think we got it. Above everything, we must get rid of that selfishness. We must, or it kills us. It kills us. The wrongdoings of others, fancy to real, imaginary shit, kills us. They destroys us. We must get rid of this selfishness. God makes that possible. It's very hard to believe in God and all you do is think about yourself. You know, and you think God is, you know, a good-looking gal or a good-looking guy or a marriage. You think you're worshiping all this other shit, and some guy wants you to worship something you can't even see, feel, and touch. You've never done it before, and it didn't work for you anyway, and you don't even know what they're talking about because none of your friends are talking about that stuff. And the guys that are talking about that stuff, your friends make fun of. And the last thing you want to do is make fun of because you feel so crap about yourself anyway. What you want to do is you want to blend in. You want people to like you. The last thing you want to do is want to be humiliated and have people laugh at you. So you come in here and what you do is this stuff is clear what you're supposed to do, but you don't want to do it because it's completely opposite of the way you live your life. So that's when the fellowship steps in. And sort of, I don't know, mildly sort of protects you from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It protects you. It says, oh, don't worry about the God thing. It protects you. It says, God can be anything. It can be like a leaf, you know, don't worry about it. It says things like this, take what you like and leave the rest. Oh, that's okay. Take what you like and leave the rest, which isn't a bad thing. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, especially when you're dealing with crazy, sensitive, childish, defiant people. That's our chief characteristic, defiance. It's not a bad thing, but we're on step 7. We're past step 6. You know, step 6 is, this is the step that separates the men from the boys. The men from the boys. We're past that step. You know, the boys are still taking what they like and leaving the rest. See, the rest that you leave, that you don't want to take because it's too bitter and it's too tough and you don't want to do it, the rest is the stuff that's going to turn you into an adult and make you a man and rock you in the fourth dimension of, dimension of existence. Taking only what you like is just going to, you're just going to continue to be your basic thumb-sucking crybaby, going to discussion meetings and talking about yourself and all your problems and crap like that. You're not going to be one of the leaders in AA. Yes, AA has leaders. I know it because it says in the traditions, it says our leaders are trusted servants. You can tell the leaders because they serve. They serve people. They go to meetings not necessarily because they need meetings, although they do need meetings, but they go to meetings because they want to see whether there's anybody they can help. Because more than anything else, like it says in the A-step, our job is to be of maximum service to God and other people. And they are focused on their gratitude. Bill Wilson said, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me this terrible disease. I got to keep talking about it and telling other people. Their entire focus becomes not so much themselves, but on what they can do to help others. They sponsor a lot of people. They go to meetings, they try to serve. They try to serve in whatever way they can. It becomes the focal point of their life, just like with Bill Wilson and Bob Smith. You know? Those are the men. Those are the leaders. We got the others that have 15, 20 years and they don't sponsor anybody and they just go to meetings because, you know, just basically not to drink, because basically that's what we're focused on. It's a not drinking club. I understand that. I don't resent it. I understand what AA has morphed into. It's morphed into essentially a not drinking club. You're going to have 25 years sober and be raping 2-year-olds, you know, as long as, hey, you haven't had a drink today, come on up, you know. It's okay, you know, don't drink even if your ass falls off. But unfortunately, I've been asked to do the steps tonight, right? So like Arthur in my office, I'm going to step on a few toes, because when you're talking about the steps, you're talking about emotional sobriety. You're talking about more than just not drinking. You're talking about becoming a grown-up. So the best thing I can do to Arthur is somehow, in some way, explain to him, you're on the wrong planet. Now in here, it may take 20 years. You know what I mean? I may not have that long with Arthur. You understand? Because the arraignment's coming up, you know? But here it may take 20 years. In here, getting him back to planet Earth, like Cheryl said, may take a couple of years. He may have to goof around with this thing with a couple of years to realize, you know, to realize what they've been telling him for 2 years in AA meetings. For 2 years they've been telling him what to do. And they may be like Cheryl, you know, after 2 years finally saying, enough of this. I haven't had a drink, but enough of this. I'm going to do it right now. It may take 2 years, because you know what it says in the 7th step? It says the way we get a new perspective is by 1,000 forms of humiliation and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. You know, most of you guys are here in Alcoholics Anonymous, you're chronic alcoholics. Let me tell you something. I bet the day before you came here, you weren't doing so well. I'll bet it wasn't like you won the lotto, you got $6 million, you know, you're getting laid every day, life is great, you got a great job, you just got a Ferrari, and you said, man, you know, this is the perfect time to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. You weren't like riding the crest, were you? You came here, you thought this was the end of your life. I mean, you said, you walk into Alcoholics Anonymous and you're saying to yourself, man, could it ever get this bad? You know what I mean? That this is the place I wind up at 30, 40, 50 years old. And what now has turned out to be the greatest move you made in your entire life, you made not because you wanted to do it, but because you were humiliated into making the decision that you would have never done if you had one scintilla of power left in you. That should give you a hint about how this thing is going to be working in your life for the next 20, 30 years. That should give you a hint on the pattern of what's going to happen. Because you want to know something? The way you finally come to the decision that you have a problem with alcohol is the way you're going to come to the decision that you got a problem relying too much on sex and making you happy. It's going to be the way you came to the decision relying too much on money to make you happy. It's the way you're going to come to the decision relying too much on your body shape is going to make you happy. It's going to be the way you're going to come to the decision that relying too much on material things is going to make you happy. The only difference is, with alcohol, the good thing about alcohol, I started drinking when I was 15. I came into AA when I was 31. What's that, 16 years? 16 years to finally drink myself to the point where things got so bad and got so monstrous, you know, where I said, I need help, I can't stop drinking. And remember, alcohol, when alcohol gets out of control, the cops get you, you know, they stop you, they say, they arrest you. I mean, shit happens to you, you know what I mean? 16 years, you know, and this disease, you know why I drank, you know what I realized? Now, you guys have this disease now and you're not drinking, right? Well, it doesn't take much thought to realize that you had this disease before you started drinking. This disease doesn't start when you take your first drink. You know what I mean? The drinking starts, but this disease starts, you know, as a sperm or something. I don't know. As you're coming down the chute, you know what I mean? I heard one guy saying it's true. It says, I'm up there in heaven, and, you know, all the babies or whatever it is are going through the conveyor belt, and God is spraying on that insulation. Whatever that crap is, God sprays on you so you can handle the shit that's going on down here. And he was about to spray me, and somebody said, God, and he looked up, and I went by, and that was it. Screwed, you know what I mean? Screwed. Well, yeah, you're laughing. You don't know what it's like. I mean, this is a rough world, you know? And so you don't use alcohol. So you use sex, or you use fantasy, or you use porn, or you use whatever it is you use, and you think it's okay because you're not hurting anybody, because they don't arrest you for driving while feeling sorry for yourself. They don't arrest you for driving while lusting. They don't arrest you for driving while envying. They don't arrest you with driving. They don't arrest you for driving with all the crazy thoughts you have in your mind. And so you don't think your life is unmanageable, but it is unmanageable because you lose friendships, you lose jobs, you lose relationships. You just don't make the connection, just like you never made the connection with the alcohol until the very end. And so if you think it takes 16 years to realize that drinking is a problem, how long do you think it takes to realize that lust is a problem, or envy is a problem, or jealousy is a problem, or pride is a problem, or anger is a problem? Well, you don't even see what it looks like because it's just the way you are. And nobody's there to tell you what the deal is. Nobody's there to point it out to you, and it's just the way you are. It's just the way you're always going to be, and it feels comfortable to you to be that way. 20 years, 25 years, 30 years, maybe never. And then you got to be like with the alcohol, willing to get to see it and get rid of it and follow the directions. No wonder only 0.5% make it to more than 20 years and make the new freedom and the new happiness. I mean, what kind of shot do you have unless you embed yourself in this thing and get serious about it and get a sponsor that tells you shit you don't want to hear? So I say to Arthur, that's a great story, how it's not your fault. You're not to blame, you know. You didn't mean to hit your wife. You know, where'd you hit her? From where the noise was coming from. Okay, I understand that. I said, because she was doing this and she was doing that. Okay, I understand. I understand all that. I said, I understand your story. It's not your fault. You're not to blame. So I got to somehow get, so I said, Arthur, let me explain something to you. I said, did you tell that story, great story, to the police? And Arthur says, well, yeah, I did. I told them everything. I said, you didn't leave anything out? He says, no, I told them everything. I says, what did they do? He says, they arrested me. I said, that's an indication of something, Arthur. I don't think that story is going to work. It didn't work on the police. It's not working on me. And I think more like the judge. I don't think it's going to work with the judge. But I think you're selfish and you're self-centered and you're bullying. I think you got an anger problem. You know, unless Arthur comes down to the planet Earth and starts seeing some stuff, Arthur's going to have a sorry life. And even if I get him off, unless there's some sort of change, it's going to happen again and again and again, just like it's going to happen to you again and again and again. Now, the problem with you guys, of course, is you might drink over it or drug over it or something like that. But it's just as sad as you might not drink over it. You might just have a miserable life. So, a certain American businessman had ability, good sense, and high character. For years, he floundered from one sanitarium to the other. This is a rich guy. He had consulted the best-known American psychiatrist. Then he had gone to Europe, placed himself in the care of celebrated physician, the psychiatrist Dr. Jung, who prescribed for him. Though experience had made him skeptical, he finished his treatment with unusual confidence. He was confident. He said he felt strong. Some of you guys feel strong. Some of you guys feel confident. You know what I mean? Just like Roland Hazard. His physical and mental condition were unusually good. How many people go to the gym here? How many people work out? How many people are both? His physical condition was good. He was strong. He was rich. He was healthy. He was confident. He had it all together. Above, and he had been with a psychiatrist, probably the greatest psychiatrist in the 20th century, Dr. Carl Jung. Above all, he believed he had acquired such a profound knowledge of the inner workings of his mind and its hidden springs that relapse was unthinkable. He knew himself. He knew how he thought. He knew what the problems were. He knew what he had to avoid. You know how it says avoid? What does it say? People, places, and things, or whatever we tell people in here? Slippery places and slippery people? He knew all that stuff, okay? He went to all the meetings. Nevertheless, he was drunk in a short time. More baffling still, he could give himself no satisfactory explanation for his fall. Most people that get drunk, they try to tell themselves stuff as to why they fell. They'll say things like, well, I stopped going to meetings. But they'll never be able to tell you why they stopped going to meetings. Or they're not sure why they're going to. And if you don't figure that one out, you're going to do it again. They stopped doing something, but they haven't figured out why they stopped doing something. He returned to the doctor, whom he admired. He asked him point blank why he could not recover. He wished above all things to regain self-control. He seemed quite rational and well-balanced with respect to other problems, yet he had no control whatever over alcohol. Why was this? He begged the doctor to tell him an answer. In the whole truth, and he got it. He's like the guy in my office. In the doctor's judgment, he was utterly hopeless. He could never regain his position in society, and he would have to place himself under lock and key or hire a bodyguard if he expected to live long. That was the physician's opinion. That was Roland Hazard. The doctor said, this is what the doctor said to him, okay? You have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. Oh, by the way, he's talking about you. How many people raise their hands when they say, are you an alcoholic? He's talking about you. He's talking about me. You have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. It never goes away. I have never seen one single case recover where that state of mind existed to the extent that it does in you. You have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. There is no recovery for you. Never happened with a doctor. Never going to recover. You may stop drinking for a while, but you're always going to be batshit. You're always going to be suffering from this life problem. Our friend felt as though the gates of hell had closed on him with a clang. He said to the doctor, is there no exception? Yes, replied the doctor, there is. Exceptions to cases such as you have been occurring since early times. Been going on for a long time. This thing we got, that you see, the rocket in the fourth dimension of existence, experiencing much of heaven, it's been going on for a long time. Here and there, once in a while, alcoholics have had what are called vital spiritual experiences. To me, these occurrences are phenomena. Phenomena. That's a scientific word for miracles. They can't explain it. They'd appear to be in the nature, you know, I can't even explain it. I swear to God, I can't explain it. I can't explain why a drunken, know-it-all, arrogant, full-of-shit lawyer, you know, who didn't believe in anything except sex, drugs, and rock and roll, is married 33 years, when I couldn't keep a relationship for 33 minutes, has four kids that he's raised, six grandchildren, is a deacon in a Presbyterian church. I can't explain it. And is talking to you here tonight. And tomorrow night I'll be talking, so I can't explain. I have an explanation which satisfies me. It's the same explanation they talk about in this book. There is one who has all power, that one is God, may you find him now. That's the only explanation I have is the explanation of this book. See to it your relationship with him is writing great events for God. No man can help you, you can't manage your way out, God couldn't, would if you were sought. The only explanation I have is surrendering yourself totally to God. Which is an explanation, quite frankly, most people don't want to hear in AA, because most people in AA are only here to stop drinking. They're not here for the other stuff. They appear to be in the nature of huge emotional displacements and rearrangements. Ideas, emotions, and attitudes. Ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were the guiding forces of the lives of these men, are suddenly cast to one side. I know it's a little bit later, you know what I mean? Can you guys handle three more minutes?
Yes.
Some people can't. It should be a lesson to you. Some people can't handle three more minutes. I don't remember ever leaving the bar. I got to the bar at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I had a wife and kid at home. I left at 4 o'clock in the morning. 12 hours in a bar, I never left. You go to Alcoholics Anonymous and you get in the juice of life. And they're saying, this son of a bitch is going over 3 minutes. Listen, you got to leave. You need to leave. You know, I'm serious. You need to leave. You got to leave. I'm going to keep on going. I'm here for the hungriest guy in the room. You know what I mean? I didn't drive up from Dade County, you know. I'm here to finish this thing up. They appear to be in the nature of huge emotional displacements or rearrangements, ideas, emotions, and attitudes which were once the guiding force of these men's lives, are suddenly cast to one side and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begin to dominate them. Dominate them. Ideas, emotions, and attitudes. That, you know what that is? Your ideas, your emotions, and your attitudes. You know what that is? That's you. Goodbye to you. You were reborn. That's what it says. That's goodbye. That's goodbye, Jerry. That's goodbye, Russell. That's goodbye, Cheryl. Adios. It's been nice knowing you. You know, we gave you. You were good, but you're not really. You're not really. We're gonna have to get it. We're gonna have to replace you. The new Cheryl. The new Jerry. The new Russell. Ideas, emotions, and attitudes. After that, there ain't nothing left. You know, that's what happens when you surrender your will and your life. Your life. Your life is part of your attitude to God. Idea. This is serious shit. This is whether you drink or you don't drink at 15 years, 20 years, 5 years. This is whether you spend the next 15 years sober but miserable, feeling sorry for yourself, or whether you're rocking in the fourth dimension of existence and every day is incredible. This is the difference whether you're scared of dying or whether it doesn't bother you at all. This is the difference as to whether or not you lose fear of people or economic insecurity, or it doesn't bother you, even if you don't have any money. You learn to be content in all things. This is the difference between being a man or being a boy, or being a woman or being a girl. This is the difference. You want to see what the difference is? Go to the discussion meetings. When you hear them talking about what they're talking about, that's what happens when you're an alcoholic and you may not be in recovery. Now, I'm not putting that down, because we all have to go through our 2 years, 3 years, 5 years. We all have to go through our desert time. The 40 years in the desert, the pounding, the great, I can't believe it, the gnashing of teeth, can't believe what's happening to me, the complaining, the whining, the thumb-sucking, cry. We all have to go through that in order to ultimately whine, cry, bitch, moan, complain, you know, and hopefully have a sponsor that slaps us down, or a group that guides us in the right way with some tough love or something like that, so that we finally see the truth, like Arth has to see the truth, and we come to some realization after 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, that this kind of behavior that we thought was okay and we weren't hurting anybody, that has nothing to do with drinking, has everything to do with drinking, has everything to do with thinking, we got to get rid of it. It may not happen for 10 years. It may not happen for 20 years. And then one day we wake up and we jettison it. We humbly ask him, we say, God, help me to get rid of this, whatever. It could be another addiction, it could be smoking, it could be sexing, it could be thinking about this, it could be obsessing about boys, obsessing about girls, it could be obsessing about money, it could be I can't take it anymore. God help me, if I'm poor, I don't care anymore. I just can't take the aggravation, the worry before it lifts like that. And then you have a whole new way of life, where all those thoughts and fears and everything that bothered you and ate your lunch and you spoke to about so many meetings, they don't bother you anymore. You know, and you look at other people and it's just killing them. It's eating their lunch and that kind of stuff doesn't bother you anymore. And you know, all of a sudden you start feeling good most of the time. Because you're not thinking thoughts, that bad thoughts about yourself and other people. You know, so when you start talking about this kind of thing, the emotional displacements that have to happen, it takes place over years, years of going through this stuff. Life's a humbling experience. You just don't want to fall off the conveyor belt. You know, I mean, in the book of James, remember the book? That's one of the books they said were absolutely essential. The first chapter of the book of James, he says, rejoice when you have trials. How about that? You ever heard of an alcoholic say, oh, I'm happy I got fired? Oh, thank you for stealing my money and bouncing the check. Would you please do it again? It says, rejoice when you have trials and tribulations, because when you persevere through trials and tribulations, he says, and you focus on God, your faith matures, you become emotionally mature, and you become harder. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. You know, the worst thing that happened to you in your life, the worst trials that happened to you, got you here, saved your life. You know, you wouldn't go back to the way you are for nothing. You know what I mean? You want more. And it all came out of trials and tribulations. And the unfortunate, look, I'm just going to tell you, the truth is nobody's going to get out of this thing alive. You're all going to go through what you're going to go through. People are going to die on you. People are going to disappoint you. You're going to sponsor people. They're going to end up drinking. You know what I mean? Crap's going to happen. You know, the checks are going to bounce. The IRS is going to come. things that have nothing to do with anything you did wrong are just going to happen to you, and you're going to have to somehow get through it. You know, the only way to learn how to stay sober, physically sober and mentally sober, in a state where you're helping people and loving on people, the only way to do that when you're broke is you got to be broke. The only way to do that when you're bored is you got to be bored. The only way to do that to stay sober physically and be interested in helping people and going to meetings and serving people and becoming a man when you're alone is you have to do it alone. You know, you got to be in the laboratory. You're going to have to go through. The only way to do that stuff and continue to help people when you have cancer and when you're sick is you're just going to have to get yourself some cancer. I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, you know, if this is the deal that you're going to be okay, if your deal is you'll be okay, like Arthur, as long as life treats you okay, as long as you get everything you want, I got news for you. You might as well start drinking right now. Because that ship has sailed. You know? And if you haven't figured that thing out at your age, you know what I mean? You just weren't paying attention. And so you don't have to worry about step 7. You don't have to worry about humility. Don't even worry about it. Because I'll tell you the deal. I don't do step 7. Step 7 does me. Life is a humbling experience. I remember, and I stole that. Tom Cruise was being interviewed on Entertainment Tonight. I don't know Tom Cruise from Adam, but I know he was being interviewed. And you know, when you're along this spiritual path, you don't have to get it from some AA guy or something. I get it from anywhere. And they would talk to him, and he was like at the height of his career. I'm sure he's still at the height of his career. And they asked him this question. He says, you're the biggest movie star, you're the biggest this and your biggest that and everything like that. And they said to him, but you're a nice guy. I mean, how do you stay humble? How do you not let it go to your head? And he looked at the camera, did one of those Tom Cruise looks. He says, let me tell you something. Life is a humbling experience. You know, even Tom Cruise gets humbled. Even movie stars, you're going to get it's humbled. Okay? That's not a bad deal. That's actually, trials are actually your friend. How you get, that's actually, God, I feel sorry for the guy who has all the money, all the everything, gets everything he wants, and never goes through any bad times. You know, that's the guy who's going to have a real problem, you know, once he's told he's got cancer. You know? Or when he suffers something, you know? He's certainly not going to be able to. How's he going to help anybody? How's he going to help the guy who's, you know, broke? Or anything like that? How's he going to say, well, that never happened to me? Unless he says, you know, I used to be that way. I used to have that problem. I had the same problem. And that's when the people say, how did you get through it? You know, so everything you're going through is equipping you to help another person 10 years from now. Whatever you're going through, Cheryl, whatever you're going through, whatever you guys are going through that you think is horrible, if you stay sober 5 years from now, you're going to sponsor somebody who's saying, I got this problem. You're going to say, I had the same thing when I had 1 year. And you're going to know exactly why God allowed you to go through it and come out of it. So you can be of a tool in maximum service. So God bless you. Thank you very much.